Okay, so we have been talking about spiritual formation, spiritual transformation. And if you were here last week, I gave you an acronym for the process of spiritual change. A three-letter acronym, and it's the word for strength and for energy. Anybody remember what that word is? Vim. That's right, like vim and vigor. And so this three-letter acronym, V-I-M, all right? And for those of you who were here last week, what does the V stand for? Vision. Vision is a picture, a dream, an image, but something in our minds of where we're headed, a better future that we're headed toward. And all of us, whether we're consciously aware of it or not, live our lives out of a vision of where we're headed, the kind of person we are becoming, that we want to become. Organizations live out of a vision. Couples, relationships live out of a vision. And anytime that vision gets crossways with each other, you have what's called a marital disagreement, because we have visions that are at odds with each other. Everything flows out of a vision. And often we're not even aware of what that vision is, but there's nothing that happens without an idea of where we're headed. So all transformation, whether it happens at a spiritual level, organizationally, relationally, whatever, physically, it starts with a vision. Okay, and then what's the second step? What does the I stand for? Intent. So I have a vision. I know where I want to go. I know who I want to be. I know what I want my relationship to be. I know what the organization to be. But if I don't decide that I'm going to pursue that, then so what? There has to be a decision. There has to be an intention. There has to be a choice that I am going to do everything within my power, within my capability, with God's help, however you want to put it, to make the vision reality. There has to be choice, intent. So once the vision is there, once the choice, once the intent is there, then how do we actually then go about making it happen? And that's the third step. Yeah, the M. That stands for, we can call it either means or method. And in the spiritual life, the means or the methods are things like Bible study, prayer, silence and solitude, different ways of connecting ourselves with God. But like I said, this applies to anything. In fact, last week I gave you the example of the Bulldog football team and how in order to win the WAC, they need a lot of vim. How did they do last week with their vim? Not so good. They need more of it. I have an appointment with Pat Hill this week. We're going to... No. We all have to have it at an individual organizational level. It has to be there. But here's the mistake that we so easily make. And that is, we say, okay, something's got to change. Something has to be different. And we jump right to step number three. And we start trying to tweak what we're doing or the way we're doing things. And that tweak doesn't quite work, so we try another tweak, we try changing another way. That doesn't work either, and we get frustrated. Because it should be as simple as just changing the way I'm doing something, and it should work. And eventually our frustration leads to disappointment, disappointment to despair, despair to quitting. And what we always have to do is step back and say, maybe I jump to step number three without really starting at the beginning. Because if the vision and the intent are not there, the means and the method just become drudgery and work. This is the hard part, step number three, and we have to have the vision and the intent to carry us through, to keep us going, to keep us reminding why we're doing what we're doing. A while back, I made a decision, so that would be right here, number two, the intent. I made a decision that I was going to hire an athletic coach because I had this vague idea that I wanted to be in shape, I wanted to do things physically, but that I needed some help because the last time I tried to do it on my own, I got sick. So I went out and hired a coach, and a professional cyclist, a PhD in kinesiology, so she knows her stuff. And one of the first things she asked me, she says, "Well, what's your goal?" And I said, "You know, I don't know. I want to ride and I want to run." Well, she says, "Do you want to do a marathon? Do you want to do a triathlon? You know, what's your goal?" And I said, "I don't know. I don't know. I just know that I want to be active and I want to do stuff. But I don't really have a goal yet. I want to do it in a way that I don't get sick, but I don't know what my goal is." So she put together a training plan for me. And on every day, there was a prescribed thing. I was supposed to ride this far or run this far and try to do it at a certain pace or keep my heart rate within a certain zone. So I started doing these workouts that she gave me. And I was excited prior to getting started with her. I thought she's going to really take me to the next level. But I soon started to do these workouts, and I found I didn't enjoy it. Because, like, if it was a Tuesday, she might have me doing a ride where I spent 30 minutes at this speed and then 30 minutes at another speed. And really, I just wanted to ride. I didn't want to, you know, do it a certain way and have to think about that and be conscious of that. I just wanted to ride. And then the next day, maybe I wanted to ride again, but her plan said I had to run and I had to do it at this speed for this time. And it wasn't very long until I really began to resent this coach's training plan that I was paying for. That was supposed to be a good thing for me. In fact, I fell off my bike, I broke my shoulder, and I found out, this is the honest truth, I was sitting in the emergency room with a broken shoulder, and I thought, good, I don't have to do her training plan anymore. I really did. So there's an upside to this, broken shoulder. And so obviously I haven't been doing her training plan, and I'm not anxious to go back. And the question is, why? Why don't I want to go back to that? Because I didn't have the vision. I don't know what I want to do with this. I'm just going through the paces. I'm going through these prescribed workouts, these routines that frankly are work. They're hard. But for what purpose? Why work hard if I don't even know where I want to go with it? And so I made the very common mistake of going right to the means with a little bit of intent but no vision of where I wanted to go with it. And it became disagreeable. It wasn't enjoyable. And so now I'm faced with, well, once I'm better and I'm getting close to being, my shoulder's doing really good, so pretty soon I can go back to working out. Do I go back to this coach? And I think, you know, not until I know what I'm going to do with this, not until I have a vision. What's the purpose? 2 weeks from now, I'm going to begin talking about the means or the methods of spiritual transformation. But before I do that, I want to spend one more time together talking about the V and the I. Why they're important, where they come from, and why it's really important that we not rush into the means or the methods until we have the first two in place. because you'll do like what I did with the coach, and it'll just be drudgery. Reading the Bible, prayer. Yeah, I know I'm supposed to do it, but man, it's a pain. By the way, starting Wednesday, September 21st, I'm going to start a class that'll meet here at the church, and we're going to study the different means and methods of spiritual formation. So if you'd like to be part of that, put it on your calendar, 7 o'clock, Wednesday, September 21st. That'll be the first session. We'll meet every Wednesday after that for about 6 or 7 weeks, and that'll be here at the church. Okay, so vision and intent. What if I don't have a vision? What if you don't have a vision for change, for spiritual transformation? Where does it come from? Where I'm going to get to eventually is that it comes from God. But it's an interesting way that God communicates his vision for our lives to us. And the very simple answer to how God communicates his vision to our life for the person that he wants us to become, the direction he wants us to go, is he communicates it to us through the longings, the desires, the hungers that are in our heart, in our soul. Every single one of you, if you're a human being and you have a soul, it may be buried, you may be out of touch with it, but it's there. You have longings within you about what you want to do with your life, what you want to accomplish, who you want to be in the future, the kind of person who you want to be. The Bible says that we love God. Why? Because he first loved us. Love doesn't originate with us. Love originates with God. In the same way, any longing that you have in your heart about where you want to go, what you want to do, who you want to become, that longing does not originate with you. It originates with God. We long for God. We long for change. We long for transformation. We long for growth because God first longs for us. And he places those within us to communicate to us who we are to be, where we are to go. He puts those longings inside our hearts. And basically the summary of my message today is simply this. If you want to know the vision that God has for your life, you've got to get in touch with the longings of your heart, the deep desires that he has placed within you. I am 44 years old. Men who are 44 years old are probably in the middle of a what? Midlife crisis. Okay. A couple years ago, about the time I turned 40, I became aware of this hunger, this longing, this deep desire in me to get on a bike and ride as fast and as far as I could. I had never had that hunger before. It was a new thing to me. Didn't know what to do with it, didn't know where it came from, but I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what the hunger was. And that hunger has produced in my life several things. First of all, it's produced a depleted checking account. Because bicycles and bicycling equipment's expensive. It is. If you're into it, you know it is. And when you're into that stuff, you know you want the best, and because you've got to race other people, and you know, that's just the way it is. So it's expensive. So our checking account knows about my hunger. it's also manifested itself in my schedule because it takes time to get out and ride a bike on a regular basis. So now my schedule is even more compact than before. I'm pretty sure that another manifestation of this whole bicycle hunger had something to do with my illness a couple years ago. And beyond a doubt, this bicycle hunger created a broken shoulder in me. So not all the fruit of it has been good. But the hunger hasn't gone away. Still there. Very deep. And this hunger in me to get on a bike and ride it fast and as far as I can is beginning to create a vision. And that vision is that I want to take what they call an epic bicycle ride. I want to get on my bike and I want to ride from like Canada to Mexico. I'm serious. Or I want to ride from the West Coast to the East Coast. Okay? This vision is really becoming a reality. It's something I think about. It's something I picture. And the longer it ferments, the more it's creating an intent that I'm going to do this. And she can't stop me. Where's Diane? She's not going to stop me. Yes. I mean, the intent is beginning to form. And if it continues to form, pretty soon, means and methods are going to start to come into place to really make this a reality. This is a truth in my life right now. But it began with a hunger somewhere down deep in there. And all of us, have deep within us hungers, longings, desires about who we are and what we want to do. Some are fairly predictable. Some are fairly obvious. When you're on a trip, you're traveling, you're away from home, especially if it's like a business trip, you're by yourself. At some point, you begin to feel a longing, a desire for home. Familiarity, family, friends, that kind of thing. And that's an obvious one. We all know that one. When you're overly busy or tired, pretty soon there's a longing in your soul just to rest and to recover and to recuperate. We all know that one. But some of the other longings that are inside of us are not quite so obvious why they're there, where they come from. Like, you know, why get on a bicycle and ride so far? Why? Really, it's not logical. Why during the holidays, when you're supposed to feel so happy and it's supposed to be so warm and you're supposed to feel so connected with everybody, why is it that right in the midst of that, you can just be overwhelmed by a longing for that this is not doing it for me. I actually feel very superficial and shallow and disconnected. And what I really, really want is something real and meaningful and something deeper. Why does that come over us? Where does that come from? Why can we be walking down the street or going about our routines and just suddenly feel just this deep hunger to know somebody or to be known at a much deeper level than anything we're currently experiencing? Now, why is that? Where does that come from? You know, our souls are deep, like I talked about last week. They're deep. We don't all understand what's going on beneath the surface. But every once in a while, stuff just rises up within us. And it's very easy to dismiss it and say, another crazy thought. We'll just get on with life. But there's something, somebody who's trying to communicate with you when that happens. Not long ago, I was at a kind of a spontaneous gathering of some friends. And it was one of those moments where it just worked. There was just a flow in the room. The conversation was easy. It was good. It was light, but it was also enriching. And I just had this sense of, God, I want more of this in my life. Where does that come from? That longing for more depth and connectedness and ease. Where does that come from? And my question to you is, when was the last time you felt it? When was the last time you felt that longing and that hunger, that desire for something else, something more, something bigger, something richer, something deeper? That longing to just to know God at a deeper level. And just to know that your life matters to Him and that what you're doing counts and that He cares. The desire just to be connected with people, to be known, to have adventure, to have some broken part of you healed and changed. To experience the joy and the freedom that would come with that. And this isn't a question that you can afford to just run past real quick because it's uncomfortable. When was the last time you felt that longing? It's not a comfortable question, but it's a really, really important one. And see, in religious circles, we're very accustomed to silence the voices inside us that long for more. We're very prone to silence our deepest hungers. We really want to distance ourselves from that because, frankly, we're suspicious of where it's going to lead us. If I get in touch with my deepest longings, it may take me somewhere really bad. We're afraid of that. And not entirely for no good reason. And so out of fear, we silence those voices. Go away. Leave me alone. I don't trust you. Shouldn't we focus on something more spiritual? And because these hungers and these desires in us, because we know they can be so volatile, we say, well, aren't they just projections of my selfishness? Shouldn't I really just shut that down and stifle it? And worse yet, what if I get in touch with my deepest hungers and my deepest desires? What if I really get in touch with that and listen to it? And then I find out that hunger or that thirst can't be met. Then what am I going to do with myself? How awful will that be to have this thing I'm in touch with that I want and I can't do anything about it? It would be better for those voices just to be quiet and those desires to stay dead than for me to bring them to life and not be able to do anything about it. And so we silence them. Yet these are some of the deepest questions of the human soul, and we can't afford to just ignore it and move on. And these questions defy very simple answers, but they're still important. And because I think all of you have a sense of what I'm talking about, I want to share with you something that is very important and is meant to be reassuring because it's true. And that is that during his time when Jesus was on his earth, he went out of his way to get people in touch with their hunger and their desire and their thirst. Not to silence it, not to get them thinking about more spiritual things, but to actually have them stop and listen to the voice inside that is longing for more. He went out of his way to get people to do that. And what that resulted in is having people actually name their desire in his presence. Say it out loud in his presence. And what this did is it brought focus and it brought clarity to people who were really spiritually hungry. And he did it by asking them very simple questions such as, what do you want from me? What do you want me to do for you? What is it that you are looking for? These were not conversation starting questions. These were soul searching questions. And these questions elicited honest response in people, opened the way for Jesus to come in and change and transform them. And in doing so, they were led to deeper levels of healing, deeper levels of truth. Mark chapter 10 contains a story we heard this morning of blind Bartimaeus, who's sitting by the side of the road. And right at the heart of this story, the pivotal point in this story, is this question where Jesus gets right to what it is that Bartimaeus really wants at the deepest level. We don't know how long blind Bartimaeus was sitting there by the side of the road begging. Good chance it had been for most, maybe all of his life. He certainly wasn't a man of means. But he heard that Jesus was passing by. And he sensed that there might be a chance for something new in his life. At least the possibility was there. And perhaps Jesus could do for him what it was that he most desired in his life. Didn't know, but maybe. And it was noisy and it was crowded because Jesus was a popular teacher. There were people who were constantly gathered around him. So it wasn't easy to get the attention of Jesus. And especially when you're blind, like you saw this morning with poor Darian trying to find his way, it's especially hard to get to the right place at the right time for what you need. So for blind Bartimaeus, his chances of getting to Jesus are not good. And yet, nevertheless, Bartimaeus does the one thing that he's able to do, and that is he reaches down deep within himself and he grabs a hold of this deep hunger with him, and it comes out in his voice. And he just yells out as loud as he can, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And amazingly, Jesus heard this voice. But it wasn't because it was louder than the other voices. It's because Jesus had an ear that was especially attuned to the human soul. And in the voice of blind Bartimaeus, he heard the cry of a desperate soul. And Jesus stopped what he was doing. And he turned and he called Bartimaeus to him. Now it's interesting because prior to Jesus doing that, it says that there were people who in their embarrassment tried to stop Bartimaeus. They told Bartimaeus, "Be quiet." Because no doubt they too heard the desperation and the despair in his voice. And it was a little bit off-putting, and it was a little bit embarrassing, so they told him, "Be quiet." And it says that he shouted all the more. And so they called Bartimaeus to Jesus. And the Bible says very clearly that Bartimaeus didn't just stand up and allow someone to lead him to Jesus. It says he threw off his cloak and he jumped up. Now that's significant because to throw off your cloak means that Bartimaeus was probably casting aside his only worldly possessions. Furthermore, it was actually a show of humiliation to cast aside your robe. It's like making yourself naked. He doesn't care. He jumps up toward Jesus, throws everything aside, and he comes to Jesus. And now Jesus and Bartimaeus are face to face in front of this crowd of people. And Jesus says to Bartimaeus, he says, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, if I were Bartimaeus at this point, my thought would be, do I really have to put it into words? Isn't it pretty obvious? I'm blind. I'd like to see. I've heard you can do this. Furthermore, there's a bunch of people here. I just took off my cloak. I'm feeling a little embarrassed. Can we, you know, do I got to say it out loud? Can we just get this thing over with? Why did Jesus ask that question? He wanted Bartimaeus to put into words out loud in front of him what in fact his deepest desire really was, to say it out loud. And Bartimaeus says, "I want to be healed. I want to see." And Jesus says, "Let it be done to you according to your faith." And then it doesn't say that Bartimaeus ran off. It says that he followed Jesus on the way. Because Jesus didn't just heal physical blindness. Jesus healed spiritual blindness as well. Bartimaeus didn't have some life to go back to. He had a new life now to follow. Didn't know where it was going. Didn't know where Jesus would take him. But this was sure better than any alternative. And so it says he followed Jesus on the way to wherever Jesus was going. And it's this question of, what do you want me to do for you? It's this question that permeated to the core of Bartimaeus' being. And just like Bartimaeus, Jesus asks us that question, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want from me? And it's a very personal question. Because everyone has a different answer. And it's especially personal because it's not a brain answer, it's a soul answer. What does your soul long for you don't currently have? And it's not something that we want to answer publicly because it is so personal, because it goes so deep. But it's an answer you need to get in touch with. And it's an answer that when you get in touch with it, it just causes all the other superficialities of your life to kind of get pulled back. You really find out what most is important to you. And all the things that you think are important, you suddenly realize are really not that big a deal. Because it gets to the very core of your being, which is actually a very tender place. See, the truest thing about you as a person, the thing that is most true about you, is your hunger, your desire, your longing to have more of God than you have right now. The truest thing about you is your desire to give and to receive more love than you're currently giving and you're currently receiving. The truest thing about you right now is your heart's, your soul's desire for spiritual growth, for spiritual transformation. You know, we often think that the truest thing about our identity is something else. Maybe something about our past. The home we were raised in, the parents that we had, how they raised us, and everything that that did to us. Or maybe you know, some terrible mistakes we've made in the past, the sin that we've brought into our current life. We often think, you know, that's the most true thing about me, and if I can just fix that, then I'll have everything I want. Or maybe we think that the thing that's most true about who we are is something that we're born with. Our giftedness, our IQ, some aspect of our personality, or some disability or handicap that we're born with. Or we might think the thing that's most true about us, that most defines who we are, is something about a role that we carry. A job title. Or who we are as a mother or father or wife or husband. But what I want to tell you is the thing that is most true about you is your longing and your desire for God and for more and for change and for growth and for love. That's what's most true about you. And that's the area of your life that God most wants to interact with. That's why He placed those longings in your heart. And it's so easy for us to dabble here, dabble over here. The thing we think are important, if we can just fix that, then everything else will be taken care of. And it's so disappointing because it never works. And God is calling to us through our soul. It's over here that I want to help you. I want to be with you. And when that gets right, all this other stuff kind of just falls into place. You know, Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and then we'll work on the other stuff." No, He said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. All this other stuff will take care of themselves." Focus on the core. Focus on what really matters. Matthew 5, verse 6, Sermon on the Mount. Beatitudes. I'll begin with the word blessed. Do you know what blessed roughly translated means? We don't have a good word for it, but it's kind of along the lines of happy. That's not quite it, but happy, joyful, satisfied, something along that line. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Blessed are those who are in touch with what their deepest heart's desires are for change and transformation and what is good. Now, what is so blessed, what is so happy, what is so peaceful about being in touch with your deepest desires for what you want? Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." For that is a hunger and a thirst that God will quench. See, according to Jesus, the path to change, the path to transformation, the path to righteousness begins with our hungering and our thirsting for it. Our wanting it at a deep level, desiring it. And so for different people, it's a different thing. But for someone, it's a hunger to be rid of constant anger. For someone else, it's a hunger to have my life not just driven by constant anxiety. for someone else. It's so that I'm not just constantly just contemptuous of everyone around me. Or for another person, so I'm not so just driven by envy and desire and lust and the need to control and the need to manipulate. And getting in touch with that desire and that hunger for things to be different. And the thing is, we'll never get to transformation by saying, you know what? My life's pretty good. I mean, I know I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. So, you know, it's okay. You get to transformation by getting hungry and getting thirsty for something different, something more, something better. You have to hunger and thirst for change, and Jesus says that is a hunger and a thirst that will not go unsatisfied. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the most profound, you might say, transformation organizations of our day. And of course, they have their very famous 12 steps of recovery. 12 steps that you go through for change, for growth. Step number one, starting point, says, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. We admitted that we're without hope. We can't fix it. We can't change it. We really want our lives to be different, but we don't even know where to start. Because we've tried and tried and tried and it hasn't worked. And alcohol's ruined my life. That's step number one. Admitting that you are broken and that you need help. And you don't want to stay where you're at. But you can't change on your own power. Every counselor knows you can't change people against their will. People come to counselors all the time because they're in pain, because things about their life are not working. And so they come for help. But you know what they want the counselor to do? They want a solution that will take away the pain without them having to change. Give me a quick fix, or fix my spouse, or, you know, something. But when the counselor starts working with them, what they realize, they don't want to change in order for the pain to go the way. They just want the pain to go away. And if you really start trying to get them to focus on change, they said, you know what? I think I'll stay with the way things are. It's more painful to change than to deal with this. So I'll just stay in my hurt. You've got a hunger and you've got a thirst for something different and something more and say, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen. I don't want to stay stuck anymore. So, would you like the satisfaction of being a better person who's living a different kind of life? And I have to ask, because not everybody does. But if you do, it won't happen until you tap into the deep hunger and the deep thirst that is in your soul, the longing. You know, it doesn't happen until you say, the way it is right now is not okay. This isn't working. Until you say, I need God to come in and fix this. A guy by the name of Meister Eckhart, he was a theologian from Germany, 13th century, long time ago. He said this. He says, the reason we are not able to see God is the faintness of our desire. The reason we're not able to see God is the faintness or the weakness of our desire. We really don't want it that much. See, the depth of your desire has a huge deal to do with the outcome of your life. It does. Often the people who set out in life and end up accomplishing the most are not the people who are the most talented, the most gifted, the most well-endowed, nor are they the people who have the best opportunities. Often, the people who end up accomplishing the most, doing the most, getting the most out of life are people who are deeply in touch with their desire. And it drives them. And it pushes them. And it creates within them a vision of who they want to be and where they want to go. Leads to a vision of a better life and an intent to carry out that life. And when the vision and the intent for a better life are there, it's amazing how the means just flow and they work. So, as you think about spiritual transformation, as I've said many times now, let's not start at the means and the method level. We'll get there. But begin at the desire level. What is it that God is speaking through your soul that you really, really, really want? Listen to that. And if, like blind Bartimaeus, when you get in touch with the hunger of your soul, the desire of your soul, and if out of that desire you will call out to Jesus for help, and if in his presence you will say out loud, Jesus, this is what I want from you. This is what I need. Tell him, name your desire in his presence, what you most want in life. Then in fact, the transformation process has already begun. And as Jesus says, that transformation process that has begun, that begins at the soul level, means that what you hunger for will be satisfied, and what you thirst for, it will be quenched.